Secret friends, unite!
Welcome to the Secret Friends Unite podcast, episode 465. This is your guide to the geek side, and I am Todd Oxtra. And before we get into this really entertaining podcast, I just want to say rest in peace, Kevin Wilson. He was a member of the Secret Friends Unite, a Facebook group. He passed away. I had met him for lunch one time. And it was sad to hear that because sometimes when you meet people on Facebook, they go away and you never see them. So wasn't sure about that. But Kevin was a good guy, big fellow Vikings fan, very fun, older geek, and RIP. And another heartfelt goodbye and, well, remembrance more like to Bobby Pauls. This is the third anniversary of his passing.
Oh, boy.
You know, Bobby was a huge part of Secret Friends Unite, our DC friend. I podcast with him many years and just want to say we miss you, Bobby, and we're thinking about you.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. Yeah. How the time does go. Well, anyway. Hey, it's great to be back. I'm Charlie, and I was gone for two episodes. And I also kind of host this podcast from time to time. And it's good to be back.
Yeah, we're together again, and I'm sure we'll talk about a lot of the stuff we've been catching up on. So it'll be a kind of a different type of episode because there's not a lot going on in the world of news, and you know, it's kind of quiet right now. We're going to get into the big news of the day. But before we do that, we want to make sure our Patreons know we care about them and their contribution to make this show happen.
Do care about them. You know, if you go over to patreon.com/secretfriendsunite, there is a bevy of extra content that we've been turning out for over a year now and actually continue to put stuff out every week, including a show that Todd and I do, which is about comic books called Spin a Rack, a show that I produce with a guest biweekly that is called The Facts Geek Life, where we take a classic series and a season of that and we break down a few episodes and have fun doing it. If you visit that website again, patreon.com/secretfriendsunite, you can get a free 7-day trial and sample it. And if you end up sticking around, that would be awesome. But we do give homage to our great patrons over on the Friends with Benefits level, John Sidorf, the awesome Phoenix Sisters Cosplay, Brendan Myers, Corey in HD, and Matthew Keel. Over on the BFFs level, we have the awesome Nias family of the Twin Cities, Sean, Stella, and Henry, and my friend Missy Merchant. Thank you, all of you, for that which you do. Again, Secret Friends Unite can be found over at patreon.com/secretfriendsunite. We'd love to have you on board for a free trial. Oh my goodness, I do love segueing into looking at this week's cover. I do love when you pull something out that is something that I got in the mail right in this very house when I was a child. And this would be the dear departed, often rebooted, but never sticking Web of Spider-Man title. This is from April of 1990. So now going back almost 34 years. Issue 65. This was a follow-up to an event called Acts of Vengeance. And Todd, I know that went across a lot of titles, but I don't feel like it really touched the X-Men. Did the X-Men participate?
Not really. No.
Yeah, I didn't think
they were
so.
Kind of removed from that because, I mean, maybe some mutants attacked some of the mainstream folks.
I think Magneto was involved. I think the whole thing was orchestrated by Loki, and his like big scheme, and it was a big fake out, was he was posing as one of his many identities, and he got villains to take on different heroes that they usually fought in an overall goal to do something evil. I don't even necessarily remember all of it. And it's been recreated in various trade paperbacks, which you can find at your local comic shop, or the issues themselves are collected on Marvel Unlimited. But of course, but anyway, in this issue, we do have featured the Kingpin, who is a obviously mainstay of Spider-Man, which a lot of potentially MCU fans are not aware that the Kingpin was introduced and was a long-time Spider-Man kind of only character before he ever interacted with Daredevil, which is how people not only through movies and TV tend to think of those being connected. But the first really bumping up between Kingpin and the Daredevil probably didn't happen until the 1980s, if I'm not mistaken, where the character had been around for 20 years prior to that. So anyway, we have a cover. I'm going to have to blow this up because the print is like really small. But you've got
to read it.
Yeah. Well, I can zoom in, but yes, we have, and I'll go kind of bottom top. We have a collection of villains that I before we got on here, I nearly recited from memory. Graviton, Titania, Goliath, who's just a big dude, the Brothers Grimm, and the Trapster, or Pastepot Pete, if you prefer. And we get, we're outside an office window. The Kingpin is inside. Everybody else is outside, including Spider-Man, where Titania says, "What you gonna do without your cosmic powers, wimp?" That's right, because this was right around the time that Captain Universe inhabited Spider-Man super briefly, and it was a part of the storyline. And he says, "Hey, I'm not paying for that window," which gets smashed by Goliath's fist. And the other box here does say, "And wait till you see how the Kingpin figures into this." And I, you know, again, came in the mail here to this wonderful address in East Grand Rapids where I grew up, and now a house that I live in with my wife, and the flat mailed brown wrapper. Absolutely no idea what happens in this.
Pray comic. For no rain.
Yes. Pray for no rain. No idea this, what happened, yeah. What the plot line of this was, or how it had any effect on anything at all. I get the overall feeling that the answer is no and nothing. So there you go.
Good. Yeah, you stuff. As a kid, I see this cover and I'm like, oh, there's so much happening. I'm so right. excited, and it probably doesn't play out well. I don't know who the Brothers Grimm are, so I don't really know anything about them.
Super.
Except they fly in a cloud.
Yeah, B villain. Graviton was a big, like, Avenger 70s villain that transitioned into being, he's kind of a big deal because much like Magneto controls magnetism, Graviton obviously controls gravity, which is, it's kind of a big deal. Titania, spinning off of Secret Wars, and then, of course, Father and She-Hulk.
Girlfriend to the Molecule Man.
Yes, exactly. No, no, no. Yeah, no, you're correct. No, no, no. The girlfriend of the Molecule Man was Volcana.
Ah, okay.
Yes, which also, but both she and Volcana and Titania got their powers during Secret Wars from Dr. Doom with one of the Beyonder's little machines. There you go. That's wonderful. What I remember.
Yeah, yeah. I think Titania took on She-Hulk quite a bit. I think
right. Kind of like and certainly did
she in was Secret in, Wars. Yeah, the TV series. Yeah.
And she was in the TV series. Exactly correct.
I do want to make a correction to something I said, which was the X-Men actually were included in X-Men.
Oh, okay.
The Mandarin crossed over into Uncanny X-Men.
Okay.
And apparently Psylocke was one of her first appearances. Mandarin had her as an assassin, which was funny because she long weird history of Psylocke. I could go on for days, but that was one of her first appearances.
Oh,
totally different than she does in the comics now.
Yeah.
And then Wolverine, it was Tiger Shark who crossed over.
I know Tiger Shark. And again, you had this, I'm familiar with all these like really weird one-off characters, which actually really litter my action figure collection because of the Marvel Universe guidebook, which was a printed, like, here's an entry about Tiger Shark. And it was, here's a picture of him. And it was just all wrote and just all scripted out. And here's the superpowers and blah. I read those backwards and forwards and backwards when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, and just retain. And I still have a printed, you know, bound volume of it somewhere. So I know a lot of these weird little characters, but yeah, nothing significant, nothing you may ever see in the MCU, but will occasionally become a Marvel Legends figure, which will fail in retail and end up at Ross Dress for Less or Ollie's here in the Midwest.
Or five under five.
Five
and under. But I do hope we eventually get the Brothers Grimm now.
Yes, know, exactly. They do look, you know, somebody flying around in a cloud. But anyway, you know, we may not know about a ton about these characters, but someone who never misses out on this kind of obscure knowledge just because of this person's commitment to journalistic excellence, if not cinematic excellence, that would be Madam Webb, our senior news correspondent down at the corner of Hollywood and Vine with this week's latest scoops. Let's go.
Now it's time for Madam Webb's rumors and news. Take it away, boys.
Thank you, Madam Webb. Well, thinking about that cover we just talked about made me think of one of your prior careers in a not so savory part of the business where you you were the matchmaker for so-so supervillains with available seniors in your area.
Oh, my.
So there you go. It's called villainsonly.com. So,
oh, my.
Oh, there you go.
Romantic intention. It wasn't like, you know, like Task Rabbit or anything like that. Hey, can you get this cat out of a tree by setting the tree on fire?
No. It was mainly for those women that, you know, it's like those women that, you know, end up marrying like prisoners.
Oh, God.
You know,
he's like changed. He's really changed. I swear.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah. I see something. I can change him.
Yeah, I see something in him that is different than, you know, the that busload of nuns he ran off a cliff. So we have a couple of trailers this week. And again, this first one, you and I were talking about it in the pre-roll, and we were both kind of like, this deserves some attention, but we don't really get it. So
yeah,
take it away.
Yeah, so Netflix has an adaptation of The Three Body Problem. So this is coming out March 21st, 2024. 8 episodes will drop, and it's based on a book, basically a series of books, like three called The Three Body Problem by Cixin Liu. It's a Chinese novel, and it tells a sprawling multi-generational story that spans the cosmos. Per the Netflix logline, a young woman's fateful decision in 1960s China reverberates across space and time into the present day, when the laws of nature inexplicably unravel before their eyes. A close-knit group of brilliant scientists join forces with an unflinching detective to confront the greatest threat in humanity's history. This is by the Game of Thrones.
Yeah, Benioff and Weiss, right?
Yep, yeah. Exactly. And if you noticed...
The description reminds me of, do you remember, and it was probably 10 years ago, Tom Hanks in a movie called Cloud Atlas? It was this multi-generational, some of it was in this distant spacefaring future, some of it was present day. I just remember it was very like grandiose, and I don't know that it made much of a dent at the box office. And it was by some filmmaker auteur. It was like a Nolan or somebody like that. Now I have to look it up.
Yeah, also based on a novel. Yeah. And that was a 2012 film. The new
novel
came out in 2004. The Wachowskis.
There you go.
If you want something odd, you go to them.
Auteurish. Yeah, exactly. So,
unless you're doing Speed Racer.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, yes. Everybody has their... So this was adapted from a Chinese novel. Is this something that is translated and known in the United States? Because I've never heard of it.
I hadn't heard of it either. I mean, I could probably look it up really quick to see, you know, if it has been success in the U.S. It must be because, I mean.
Right. Otherwise, why would it be highly anticipated, according to Variety? Because, Variety would never lie to us. I enjoyed that Cloud Atlas film. But again, I saw it, you know, one time 12 years ago. So I certainly couldn't tell you. A ton about the plot line, because I know they've not gone back and watched it again, but I remember really enjoying it. But again, it was long, it was very dense, and that, I think, concept of that really lends itself well to an eight episode program like this. And Netflix is kind of drop all at once, if I'm not mistaken, typically. Yes. Though I know they split
the season in half like Stranger Things.
That's just drawing out those dollars. I think that this could, again, not heard of it, but just in reviewing the concept by watching the trailer and then reading this blurb, I think that this could be interesting. And this is out in a couple of weeks,
About 2 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The book series was actually nominated for a Hugo. But originally was for in Chinese, they translated it, which is obviously is difficult because you think about nuance and anything like that. Translating is always tough.
Right.
Yes,
you've never enjoyed Shakespeare until you've heard him in the original Klingon. I know.
Exactly.
Same thing.
Exactly. It brings a new depth. But if you noticed in the trailer, if you watch it, folks, you'll see a lot of actors from Game of Thrones are in this.
You have the Tarlock or the heavyset guy. What's his name?
Tarly. Tarly. Yep. There Tarly. You go. Yep.
That was
John Bradley. Was in Game of Thrones. Just Hong. Yeah. And then C. Shamuka was from Arrow. Which is a name I'm not familiar with. Yeah. When I look at this really quick, I kind of see things that make me feel like, because there's one scene where people are like flying into the air. This makes me feel like there's going to maybe a biblical intent, because they say they're coming. Mm-hmm. We don't know who. Could this be more like the rapture versus a real, you know, like they talk about climate change is thinking. I think about like, you know, in the Old Testament, you know, with the frogs, the plague.
Right.
I'm wondering if this could have something biblical about it, and it's that where the rapture happens.
Would be interesting coming from, you know, a Chinese novel. And again, I'm not expounding about religion. It's just not my great understanding that Christianity was huge in China. I don't know.
No, it's
not. I didn't think so. Good. I didn't like influence, right?
I mean,
I didn't want to go too far out on that limb and have you say, well, it's very big in China. Didn't you know?
No, I would not know that. Yeah, I know in other Asian countries, like Christianity is big, like in Korea, even Japan. Right.
That's not in China. Yeah, I just don't believe it's the case. So anyway, that's interesting. And again, out in a couple of weeks and also out in a couple of weeks. And I did watch these trailers, I will admit, just before we jumped on, April and I were sitting on the couch. And so I was watching on my laptop and I just kind of turned it in her direction. So we kind of watched this one very intently. And this is called Late Night with the Devil, with starring David Dalmashian, who is an actor that you've seen in the Ant-Man films. He was one of the Joker's flunkies, going back all the way to The Dark Knight. He's one of the James Gunn, kind of saga stars. They seem in a lot of his stuff as well, but he is portraying, as seen in this trailer, a late night television host on Halloween night back in 1977 when people were still going to see Star Wars. Because did you know Star Wars, the original Star Wars, was in the theaters for I believe upwards of 2 years. People just
that doesn't surprise me.
Going to see it.
That doesn't surprise me whatsoever.
Yeah, I know.
When did it start showing on TV? Was it 79?
No, 80, either 83 or 84. It was when the saga was over, because it was re-released in theaters in 1982. And I think that's when I saw it for the first time, because I saw Empire in 1980 with my dad and my brother when it was new. I was 4 years old. I saw the original Star Wars in 82 because it was re-released as kind of filling the gap between Empire and Jedi. They had to get it back out there. Isn't that weird?
So it is weird. And I just looked this up. I'm like, so Star Wars was first released on home video in 1982 on VHS, Betamax, Laserdisc, and CED video disc, which I have no clue what the hell that is.
I didn't know that was the home video release. I know I had my first grainy dubbed copy of Empire in 1984 when we moved to Grand Rapids, because one of our Detroit friends had dubbed it for us. And it was a bad dub in the first, like, 15 minutes of it was missing. Like, it was like scrambled, like, you know, it was like scrambled HBO. Whoops.
Oh, was it recorded off TV?
It must have been, or something.
Oh, no, but 84 would have, I guess it could have been on TV.
Yeah, it could have been a dub. But anyway, we are way off track here. Going back to David Dalmashian. So he is portraying a late night host of a show called, was it The Night Owls? Where it's like it's like a Carson, or it's like a, you know, Stephen Colbert kind of, it's on after everything and people stand up and watch it. But he portrays things of, you know, mysticism and whatever it is, and it's a variety show of sorts. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing in this trailer both watching, you know, a studio audience watching him doing his thing, and then you're seeing asides of backstage and him talking about, you know, getting ratings and keeping a show on the air and doing something new and groundbreaking. And then the big driver, and there's a lot of things in this trailer that just make you go, God, how does that fit in, which is exactly what you want out of a trailer. You want to create a sense of, oh my God, what the hell's going to happen there? But his big draw for the night is he brings in a woman and a young girl who is a known vessel in the sense of summoning the devil. So this young girl is chained to a chair and she dips her head down, and the older woman is, you know, doing an enchantment or an encampment or whatever it is. And then, yes, the woman pops her head up and does the very typical, you know, horror film, you know, and then, you know, you see other footage of laser bolts shooting out and all this different stuff going on. And this just looks totally wild. Totally wild, yeah. A March horror film, but yeah, sucked us right in. So we're totally jazzed for this. This looks fantastic.
Yeah, it'll be on Shudder. So it's going to be
in Shudder.
Shudder. Okay. So if you have AMC Plus, you'll get this most likely, because they get Shudder content.
We have. Oh, and that's something I forgot I could touch upon in the Geekies, talking about AMC Plus, because there's a show that's back there now. We have it through, and I didn't know I still had it through Prime. So I see. Okay. I have that. So okay.
Yeah. Apparently, the woman was a survivor of a satanic cult. So, and then it's based on this book. So this is a big stunt on TV. He wants to get ratings, something exciting.
Right.
This is live TV, and there's a band. So it kind of reminds me of, like, you know, Johnny Carson or what was his name? What's the other guy? The old dude who did that one talk show recently, smoking and talking.
Not Merv Griffin. There was, of course, back and there was Dick Cavett back in the day, but that was more daytime, I think, wasn't it?
Tom Snyder. That's the guy.
Tom Snyder. Yeah, exactly. But obviously this is, again, it's live TV and the overall thought is, you know, you're seeing the devil come out in this young girl and then the audience reacting and obviously something's going to happen that everybody's trapped and then, you know, the peril, it's all being caught on tape. So I wonder if this is going to be more of a, I got the vibe. It's more of a kind of a found footage kind of thing. Like it's an archive. And then it's also combined with, you know, oh my, you know, my little cousin was here and he was also shooting Super 8 film backstage. And then he caught kind of a framing sequence around other things that are going on. So I don't know. But so you're saying that I can watch this at home or it's going to be in the theater or I got to go to the theater.
It's going to be theater first, then Shudder.
So, oh, there we go. Yeah. I did see the Shudder part of it. So, well, cool. Yeah, I'm totally down for this. We will definitely go check this out. And again, April and I do have the three movies a week movie pass at the Celebration Cinemas, which is a chain here in outside of Detroit and Michigan, but focused here in Grand Rapids. So we will probably go check this one out. As we did go check out a horror film, which I will talk about in the Kikizu, which was, whew, oh boy. Well, good deal. All right, what do we got next? This one's coming back to Michigan. This is a Michigan story.
Yeah, so Jerry Seinfeld is the man of few projects post Seinfeld.
Right.
Essentially, he's done Cars, Comedians in Cars, Talking Coffee. He did the B movie.
No,
that's
right.
About all he's done. He's done on.
He doesn't have to, baby.
On a couple of episodes,
he's got them. He's got them residuals.
Yeah, so he has decided to dip his toes because he did a comedy bit about Pop-Tarts a long time ago, and apparently decided that he's still so excited about Pop-Tarts that he is going to do a bio, you know, kind of a biopic or historical story about the creation of Pop-Tarts called Frosted. And
from a company that need not be named.
Yeah, based in Battle Creek, Michigan. Yep.
Yes, exactly.
Yep. So this is going to be, and we've got, you know, a cast of great talent in this, and we found out today that Hugh Grant will be playing the role of the serial mascot Tony the Tiger. He says the man behind Tony the Tiger is described as a disgruntled Shakespearean actor who, much to his chagrin, find himself having to don the Tony the Tiger outfit. Perfect for Hugh. Hugh's always a grumpy man now.
Yeah, I love it how you say serial actor, and you think it could be serial, like what is meant in this context, or like a serial killer, or as my, and you'll appreciate this because there's a huge Air National Guard base in Battle Creek, which has A-10s, which my brother referred to as the serial killers. if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes. It's always good. So the cast includes James Marsden, Melissa McCarthy, Jim Gaffigan, Amy Schumer, Christian Slater, Jack McBrayer, Tom Lennon, Adrian Martinez, Bobby Moynihan, Max Greenfield, and Sarah Cooper. So you got like a killer's list of like, you know, Saturday Night Live alumni, very funny people.
Yeah.
And it will be coming out soon. And I'm not sure exactly where it's going to release. Probably Netflix is my guess.
I was skimming this article. So this is a VOD, is what you're seeing. It's not gonna be in theaters. I'm skimming and there I don't see a date in here. So that's weird. We've been hearing about this for a couple of months. The cast for the film was announced a couple of years ago, but I feel like this was news just like it ended up in Variety or it was Entertainment. I would say Entertainment Weekly, but I don't know that exists anymore. It was somewhere. You're going to have to give it a quick googs. But yeah, I'm dying to see this. Obviously, I'm a huge, you know, living in Michigan, being a huge proponent of Michigan in my career, I'm a huge Michigan guy and love to see us and stuff. We just rewatched, or it was a rewatch for me, but April had never seen it. But the first big project that Judd Apatow and Paul Feig did together, that Freaks and Geeks, that was on back in the year 2000,
which was
set in a fictional town of Clinton, Michigan, which was Clinton Township, which is where my dad lived when I was a kid. And it's very close to St. Clair Shores, which is where I lived for years and years. So that was very near and dear to my heart. And I always get a big chuckle when something is said in the Midwest, but it's totally in Simi Valley in California because, oh, there's those famous Michigan mountains that I see when I look out my back window.
It's always sunny in Michigan. You know that, too.
Exactly. Absolutely. Like it is right now. This is fabulous. So did you find it? Did you Google it?
No. I'm guessing, though, it's going to be a Netflix or one of the streamers. Obviously, he has a history with NBC, but he's done stuff for Netflix. Right. So who knows where it's coming? Exactly. We'll find out when it's coming. But I like these type of things. I love the biopics. I like the stories of, you know, companies and when you get to
did you end up seeing the one about the Air Jordans? I didn't see that one. I heard
it. No, I wanted to. I also wanted to see the one about the founder, about the history of McDonald's. That looked cool.
The Ray Kroc one with Michael Keaton. Yeah. That's got to be out there somewhere streaming. But anyway, all right, moving right along. This was a nice grab. This didn't even show up on any of the regular Star Trek ones that I find. We don't talk over on Code 47, which is our dedicated Star Trek podcast, which is run by me, which, by the way, if you tune into the most recent release, it was about the experience of myself and my wife, April, on the Star Trek cruise. We had a ton of fun. That dropped last week when you're listening to this. But anyway, Todd found this fun article about rare and weird Star Trek collectibles. And I will tell you that I know at least the comic book on the far left of this first image, if you're looking at the link that's provided in our show notes, was from when Marvel Comics briefly grabbed the Star Trek license again in the late 90s. Todd, that's when you and I were at MSU. We were roommates. And this was one we went down to that comic shop on Michigan Avenue that we always shopped at. And this was one of those weekly grabs that I got. I loved it. It was a now non-canonical portrayal of Captain Pike on the Enterprise before Kirk and young Spock and all this different stuff. But the most infamous of what you see listed here in this article would be the early Voyages. I've got a few issues of that. My physical comic book collecting these days, after having had and sold comic book collections twice, is that I get stuff that I know is dead otherwise, like cannot be found in digital. So I have issues of that Star Trek Early Voyages. Oh, even though it says buy them here, there's a link and it just takes you to eBay. So it's going to be individual issues. But the old Star Trek Gold Key comics were on when the show, you know, were out when the show was on. And, you know, there's blurbs about, like, the, you know, some of the weird background aliens from Star Trek, the motion picture, tops cards, but the absolute greatest one, and this is a classic for the ages. And you will see this, at a Star Trek con, like Star Trek San Francisco Creation Show, which is going on the weekend that we're recording this, or at Star Trek Las Vegas, which we went to last year, is the absolutely fantastic Spock helmet from the 1970s. It is literally a white plastic helmet with a chin strap and a red gumball police, you know, cruiser style spinner on top. And if you scroll down to the bottom of this, you'll finally find it. So I'm looking right at it, and I'm not sure if the visor goes up and down, but it has, at least this example, has three numbers on it: 800, second line, 003, second line, 009. I'm curious what the significance is. Obviously, this came out, in 1967, released by Enco Industries, was called the official Star Trek helmet. Red light on top and a black antenna, as I described.
This was a dead era for Star Trek, too, because there was no series. There's nothing going on. And
it was between the animated series, which was in 1972, 1973, and then Star Trek.
Well, this is 76, not 67.
Yeah, it came out in 1990. Yeah. Oh, you're right. I did kick
76. So this is post everything. It's like
that was the same year that I came out.
No wonder it's so valuable. Nobody wanted it.
Into the world, exactly. But, you know, it did say, so it does go on to say nobody really understood what it meant. Lower Decks canonized it in an episode in 2020, as it was revealed to be part of Beckett Mariner, the awesome Tawny Newsome, who I know from the convention circuit, part of her contraband in that episode. And then in 2019, Ethan Peck, who is our Spock on Strange New Worlds and Discovery, unboxed one on StarTrek.com. Currently fetching $800 for an in the box and maybe $50 outside of the box. You know, I'll tell you, if I could find one out of the box, I would buy it and it would end up back here in my menagerie. If you happen to be watching us on YouTube, you see my menagerie behind me. I would put it on top of the Clone Wars helmet. What do you think? Or on top of Cobra Commander?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
What do you think? Iconic. So he, he gets a little taller.
Put it on Darth. You know, you got to put it on Darth Vader.
Oh, you're right. Exactly. Yeah. Darth.
Only place it belongs.
Because it could go, it would seemingly fit right over it because it's kind of dome shaped. So I love it. That would be a fun one. So Todd, I'll put it to you. If you ever go to a show, you happen to see one and the price is not too outrageous, I'm good for it.
I don't even know what that means. Not too outrageous. I don't know for a Star Trek. Well,
$50 seems to be not a bridge too far. You know, I would pay $50 for something like that. Cause, and you know what? It's a write off for the show.
Perfect. Yes. Yes.
You take it out of my cut from the Patreon. That $50.
Yeah. So I'm just looking at these, the ones I really love that stand out. Any glass from Star Trek, you know, or any geek thing that a restaurant had a glass available for. I always love those.
And I had a sidebar on that. Corey Clay, who is one of our board members on the USS Grand Petoskey, our fan club chapter, donated items for our charity auction last year when we did our show in November. He had a complete set of the Star Trek 3 glasses, which he presented and said, you can either put these in the auction or I offer them to you as a gift because he knows that that is my favorite Star Trek film. So I decided to keep them. So they have a place of honor of sorts on the shelves with the rest of my glasses, of which I still do have, I think, three of the old Star Wars glasses from, I think it was Burger King, if I'm not mistaken. Empire and Return of the Jedi. You know, I had more than that, but they've broken over the years. I mean, you know the drill. So
the Slurpee, like 7-Eleven Slurpee cups, they always had things. Yeah. So
Taco Bell offered those back in 1984 to search for Spock. Yeah. So wow.
Love that. Charlie, the Star Trek 4 movie cast bomber jacket. Look at that bad boy.
Ooh, my goodness. Star Trek 4 was actually the first Star Trek film that I saw that I felt like it really made me a fan, though I had seen Star Trek, I think, 3 at the little two-screen Michigan Theater in South Haven, which is my mom's hometown. But yeah, Star Trek 4 was the first one, the one with the whales, that I feel like when I saw it, I really felt like a fan.
It was a big crossover hit. Yeah. It was a big one. Yeah. What about this one? Did you have this Lower Decks vehicle from the Titan from Eagle Moss?
Yeah, I absolutely do.
There you go. $120.
I don't know if it, and that, you know, that's not that far off of retail because that's one of the larger. I have a smaller version of it, but Eagle Moss, before they suddenly went out of business, taking $200 of my money with it that I never got back because I had an order in when they just went, turned their website off, they were gone. And some of that inventory has come back into stock through a company called Hero Collector, which I bought a few things from them. But they upsized their ships and the prices went up. So the size of the ships went up maybe 100%. So they were just like twice as big.
Sure.
I have the smaller version of this because this was Lower Decks that finally made this design canon, because this was the ship that Riker goes off to be captain of at the end of the last Star Trek film. So, and then for a while in Lower Decks, Boimler, who's Jack Quaid's character, was served on the ship for a little amount of time. So, good stuff. Yeah, I do have, I'm pointing in the wrong direction for a lot of my Star Trek stuff, but you can see kind of bits and pieces if you look over my shoulder here and there. But Eagle Moss, I do have a beautiful glass back lit curio case that I have in my den that I have a huge quantity of those Eagle Moss ships. But yeah, Eagle Moss went on for too long and they became too neat, kind of niche, and they drove themselves out of business because they were making
Marvel Legends problem.
Yeah, Marvel Legends is still around. Yeah, I don't, I mean, we know that Hasbro's going through some tough times, but they haven't blanked on any orders yet. So but anyway, yeah, cool stuff. All right, you take us home with this last one, because this is
Charlie, I love a fake generated marketing date.
Right.
We have May the 4th. We have some other ones that are out there, probably another Star Trek Day or whatever they call it. And only, you know, that doesn't really roll off the tongue when they talk about that date. And then we have Mario Day, which is Mark 10th. So it's Mar 10.
Which is today. We're recording. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So Nintendo's finally just embraced this because it's money. So there you go.
It's me. It's money.
Yes,
wait, that's not what somebody says. Money-o.
Yeah, so they did release a trailer today, and basically nothing that we need to go through, but basically finally revealing that we are getting a sequel to the Mario movie coming out in 2026.
Money-o. No, not at all.
Money huge.
O. Yeah, that was very, very big. And again, I didn't end up seeing it. It was a favorite of my son's, but I didn't end up seeing it. Everyone who I talked to said it was absolutely fantastic.
Yep. It's a fun movie full of, you know, if you're a video game fan, it means so much more, but it's still a charming animated movie.
I get
we're getting it. Yeah, we're going to get Zelda, a movie about Zelda coming out as well. Sony's going to be doing that one, which is interesting because Sony and Nintendo enemies.
Oh, my goodness.
Sony has big studios like Columbia. So other than that, not much else was announced, but I thought this was fun. They're fully embracing the idea. They announced a couple of video games that are coming because of that as well. And we'll see where this goes. But 2026, we'll see if this one is as big as the first. I'm guessing not, because I'm guessing they're going to get into bits and pieces that are really for a lot of people. That a lot of people are like,
it is. And more often than not, sequels don't tend to be, particularly in this space, because they get a little self-referential, and it just the quality can tend to tank out a little bit. I mean, you could really name a handful of sequels that really were financially more successful than the first one, or creatively, you know, Back to the Future, not back. I was thinking The Empire Strikes Back, or Godfather 2 is a famous example, or Terminator 2, whatever. There is precedent, but we shall see. But anyway, that takes us out of the news. But what it takes us into, Todd, duck your head for this segue, is a word from our sponsor. Whoop.
Hey, Secret Friends Unite. Let me tell you about Zencastr. We use them for our show, and now they're supporting us. Zencastr is now the all-in-one solution making podcasting easy. It's the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content, all from one dashboard. Being a creator has never been easier. And we chose Zencastr because of the ease of use, high quality output, and it makes it super easy for our guests to come on. We had multiple solutions we tried before, and Zencastr has just been the best fit for us. Why Zencastr? It's now super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. Log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. Record studio-quality sounds and up to 4K video with your guests. Feel a sense of Zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. Have you ever worried what you sound like? Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs in your recording. It removes those awkward pauses in conversation too. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with the click of a button. So if you're interested in making an easy, high-quality podcast just with the click of a browser button, go to Zencastr.com/pricing and use my code SFU1. You'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Now back to the show.
Talk nerdy to me. Talk nerdy to me.
We're sitting in the Geekeasy, cover bands playing, drinks are poured, and we are ready to get our nerd on. Charlie, I'm drowning in content right now. Too much stuff.
You know, it's funny, particularly after the writer's strike. I remember a conversation I had with my dad about a year ago when the strike was going on, or thereabouts about a year ago. I said, Dad, great news, or not great news, writer's strike, it's not good. These people are trying to make their nut, you know, they're trying to make their living. Great news is all those shows you never watched, now you got time to watch them. And they're piling up, so that's where you're at, huh?
Well, no, these are new things. That's the problem. These are all new things. We've got Halo is obviously ongoing.
Oh, so I'm behind. Yeah, we're behind on that. Yeah,
it's so-so. There are some good episodes.
Not super fired up to get. Not liking it as much as I liked the first season. So yeah, I'm just not fired up to get back.
Yeah, Avatar dropped a couple weeks ago. I'm trying to stay afloat of that. And then the big show is that I've really just dove in and love is Shogun. They're in episode 3 now. Shogun is fantastic. I highly recommend it to anyone.
Was that Hulu?
I love that show. Hulu's got it because it's FX and it goes to Hulu. So that's what I'm like. I'm trying to keep up. So I'm there. So too much stuff.
Yeah, the only big danger is like, well, it's like the shows are going to be there. You're not going to miss them, right? But the big danger is the spoiler culture we live in, that you're like, oh, you're going to catch a stray headline that's going to say, plot twist at end of, you know, episode 3 revealed, and then it'll say something spoilery. Hopefully you don't run into too much of that, but obviously that's always the danger.
Yeah, because I just found out that they just dropped a new Fallout trailer because they got, you know, close to the show. That one's dropping. That one's an Amazon Prime show, and it's dropping all the episodes at once. So Amazon's all over the place. And that sucks because, once again, I feel like there's value in having something weekly where people can catch up, watch one episode. They don't feel like they're too far behind, and you get people continuing to talk about it. I feel like shows that drop at once.
Yeah.
2 months later, you probably don't remember it.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I mean, even shows that I've found with, as you said, this embarrassment of riches that we have in content, I'll tune into a show that has just, you know, it aired a year ago, which is in a lot of ways very standard, and I just don't remember anything about it. Thank God for that catch-up that they show before, because you're like, I don't remember anything about it at all. But yeah, I'm totally with you. I don't see obviously there's a school of thought around it, but I don't see the value in the big drop. As a consumer, it's like, oh, there's a big drop of 8 episodes. And, you know, if you got a dead weekend where you're not going anywhere, let's say it's the dead of winter here in the Midwest, of which we get really bad ones, you're like, we're just going to stay in and watch this. That's maybe great for us as a consumer, but for the person that produces the media, your ability to really have that buzz, it greatly diminishes. So I'm still a fan from an opposite perspective of the weekly show. Like, I totally get it. You know, I got a screener recently that has the first 4 episodes of season 5 of Star Trek Discovery. And I got to tell you, that's something I'll put it as a side plug. Best of the series, season 5. We've watched 3 of the 4 episodes, and I'm absolutely blown
latest
away.
Is greatest.
Yeah, no, it's looking back over it, it's absolutely fantastic. So again, thanks to the folks at CBS Paramount for their support of our show and me for giving us access, because it's absolutely fantastic. But anyway,
So I just, you know, at this point, I'm like, everything becomes bingeable because eventually the whole show comes out, and then you can binge it to your heart. So it's always funny, because like, you always get that. So yeah.
But like I said, and you and I've run into this in the social media aspect of SFU that we've run, certain people get really sour around the fact that they're like, oh, I'm waiting till all 10 episodes come out to watch it.
It's fine.
And it's fine, but just don't be so butthurt if somehow a spoiler catches your eyeballs, because when you wait, that's the danger. So you just have to be prepared.
That's perfectly fine. Yep, that's exactly. Right. So the only new thing I really have to talk about this week is finally watched Aquaman and the Lost City.
You didn't see it in the theaters? I guess I had forgotten they hadn't seen it in the theaters.
We just missed that window because, you know, it was over the holidays.
COVID,
in-laws were here, and we're we'll just wait till it comes to Max.
Yeah.
So it's on Max.
And I know we didn't talk about it. You were it's, you know, give it a chance. And I saw it, and I will admit I didn't really give it a chance, but I'm curious what you thought.
Well, I enjoyed the first one because I thought that the first one was just a fun romp. It was an action adventure, kind of like Romancing the Stone between Amira and Arthur.
Romancing the Seaweed?
So, I mean, and there was goofy parts about it, but I totally was all in, enjoyed it. This one, though, was not good.
I'm glad that you feel that way, because that is how we felt.
It was a step back. I really didn't feel like this felt like a very generic film. There was nothing like endeared me to any of the characters. Totally a mixed bag of, you know, why are we doing this? And
not even the
motivations.
Not even the greasy cheeseburgers with the bugs on it at the end.
Well, that's the way the DC universe ends, is Worm eating. Sorry, folks, spoilers. He eats a cheeseburger with a cockroach in it.
Right. Because, it was set up in the film. And again, by this time, you've either seen it or you haven't. I'm glad you and I see eye to eye. I know you were very strong. You were very ardent. Like, give it a chance.
You didn't like the first movie. Really, rarely does a sequel convince you to the second one.
Here's the thing about that. I think that's a valid argument. I didn't really have any specific recollection of how I felt about the first one when I saw the second one. I really didn't. I didn't know going in. I'm like, I remember.
You were kind of like, oh, it's another DC film. I think that's kind of how you came out. Like, you felt like, oh, it's another DC film.
I was going to say, you remember it better than me. Because I just, like, I remember the framework that, like, he's the, you know, idiot prince and his brother's the bad guy and he's doing some stuff. And then there's Black, I want to call him Black Mantis, but it's Black Manta who's the bad guy. And, yeah, I remembered very little, but yeah, this did feel very much like it was almost as if they knew, hey, we're gonna put this movie out anyway, it doesn't matter if it sucks, because it's gonna be washed away.
Well this film was like done a long time ago,
right? Yeah,
before they even announced like DCU was going away. So I know James Wan, who directed this, who's a good director. He wanted to do that movie, The Trench, which was kind of a spinoff of Aquaman, where it was all the dark creatures were there. So we got this. Obviously, all the issues with
Amber Heard. Amber Heard.
Yeah, she was in this, but she really wasn't in this. She showed up multiple times. She didn't die, folks. The kid didn't die. Sorry to spoil that. So there's nothing bad.
I wanted him to kill that kid. I'm so bummed out.
I know. Well, that's why, like, someone said, I walked out because of the baby. I'm like, oh God, they didn't kill the kid. Well, the comics, the kid did die.
It was the same thing in, and I'll talk about Walking Dead in a minute. The kid did die. The Judith, who was the baby, did get killed along with Lori when they were fleeing the prison in the comics, which didn't happen.
I remember that. So I would say if you want just a dumb movie to watch when you're bored, put on this movie.
Put it on the background while you're doom scrolling.
You want to see Nicole Kidman get a paycheck. You want to see Dolph Lundgren have a weird accent.
You see
Gimli as a big crab man. Talk.
The near death of Jango Fett. Yeah, exactly. And all the clones. Because you have Tamara Morrison as the dad of Aquaman while he's hanging out. I thought in particular the first scene of this movie where you just see him doing Jason Momoa stuff. I'm like, this is terrible.
It reminded me he has like, it's the Jason Momoa story. I'm being cool and doing all these weird things.
He's doing like, doughies on his dirt bike or something. It's just like, oh God, this is what the movie's going to be like.
It's a thing.
Well, yeah. I'm glad we were of similar thoughts. So, all right. Well, I haven't been on in 2 weeks, during which we were on the cruise. And so that was a lot of seeing Star Trek and talking Star Trek. Did mention that we, April and I have seen the first four episodes of season 5 of Discovery. They're absolutely spectacular. That show drops on April 4th. So set your timers now. But we did go to the cinema this past weekend, and April and I are, as I've talked about many times, we'll just go see anything. Because why the hell not? We have this ongoing subscription to our local theater, which we like to support because it's a local business, and I think they do a pretty good job. We have a lot of free time. You know, and like all businesses, they raise the cost of this incrementally by like a couple of bucks. So it's in the neighborhood of like $50 a month for the two of us to go to the theaters. But that's less than 5 movie tickets, if you think about it, between the two of us. Because a non-matinee movie ticket at this theater, when I looked, is upwards of $13.50 now, I think, which I think is just nuts. But anyway, we went to go see a movie called Imaginary, and it was a horror film of sorts. Had to do with a younger-ish woman. They had a cast of that I recognize absolutely nobody except for actor Tom Payne, who played the role of Jesus on The Walking Dead. Was a character during the course of the show who had long hair and a beard and thus was dubbed Jesus. He was
not wonderful. Jesus.
Not Jesus or Jesus.
Jesus of Nazareth was not on The Walking Dead.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Why do you think the ratings were so big? But no, it had to do with this young black woman who is stepmother to a teenage girl and then a preteen girl. And their father was Tom Payne, Jesus, if you will. And, you're introduced to the stepmom. She has these terrible nightmares of her childhood, but she, when she's in the waking world, you know, they're moving her father into a nursing home, and she's moving back into her childhood home. And she and her dad have been estranged for many years because she was taken away from him and she doesn't really remember why. But back in this house, what we find out is that it's inhabited by a demon who, sorry for the spoilers, ends up taking the form of a stuffed teddy bear, which can only be seen by the pre-teenaged stepdaughter, who calls the bear is, oh my God, Chauncey. The bear is Chauncey. But
of course it is.
Not revealed until later in the film that she is the only one who sees the bear, except for the stepmother, and you find out why she can also see it. Mm. And that's what the movie's all about. So, very cliched, very run-of-the-mill. It's a Blumhouse production. So Blumhouse is either spectacularly awesome, like the Jordan Peele films, or it's spectacularly run-of-the-mill. But if you enjoy the sporadic jump scare, if you enjoy being in a theater with a lot of people in it and the person you went with, you can have fun kind of heckling it, which is what April and I do. Anyway, not only for that, but also for the Patreon show that we did, of which we just dropped an episode this week, where we talk about 2021 Snake Eyes. Todd, you should have a listen. I think you enjoy it because you never saw the movie.
Well, then I'll get spoiled and I won't want to see the movie.
No. Oh, my goodness. But anyway, it says very, very, very run of the mill. But something that's not.
I was going to ask you because, it's funny because, you get those competing movies like two volcano movies. We get Dante's Inferno or the volcano is a movie. It's funny because we've got this imaginary movie, which is a horror film. And then we've got If, which is the lighter fare Ryan Reynolds about a girl.
Oh, yeah.
A magic. So I'm like, folks, take your kid to the right movie.
Yeah, right. Imaginary if imaginary. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah, don't take your 6-year-old to see Deadpool, because that was always a famous story about that one. And then something that we saw that's not iffy is we finally settling into True Detective over on Max. Oh my gosh, we watched the first season, which was it was set in Louisiana, and it was McConaughey and Woody Harrelson, and Alexander Daddario has a scene in it that no man will ever forget, but I'm not going to talk about that. But just a great twists and turns, and you never really know what's going on. And then we just finished season 2 last night, which season 1 was 2014, season 2 was 2015. Season 2 had, again, a huge cavalcade of stars: Colin Farrell, Rachel McAdams, Vince Vaughn, I just drew a blank on his name, the guy who was Gambit in Wolverine, Taylor or something or other.
Oh, Taylor Kitsch.
Yeah, Taylor Kitsch. Absolutely awesome. That one is set.
Oh, really? I've heard that move. That's like the worst season. Good at all.
I don't know, because now we're just moving into season 3 and we've already seen season 4.
Okay, because season 3 I've heard is good, and then I just started watching season 4, which I really liked so far.
I don't know who would have said it was bad and why, because I thought it was riveting. It was kind of white knuckling, because it has to do with a real estate scam and murder in suburban Los Angeles. And, three cops from three different agencies tasked with solving a certain murder. And again, it's layers and layers and layers, very much like more of a modern day LA Confidential, which is one of my favorite films, a film from the 90s. I don't know who or where would it, but again,
Rotten Tomatoes gave season 2 47% and the audience score was 26%.
Really? I don't know what people would have disliked about it. I don't know. I respect people's ability to make their minds up for themselves. I don't know what people wouldn't have liked about it. That just seems very weird to me.
Rotten Tomatoes for season 1 got 90% on
Okay. Yeah. I wouldn't even, and again, these are very self-contained stories. Sure. Though you did see pieces of season 4, which was my first exposure to it, kind of wend their way into season 1. Have you watched any of it besides season 4?
No, and that's why I was like, okay, because I've known season 1 was fantastic, and I've heard like different things about the other season. I'm like, well, let's get into season 4, because I don't think it's really, integral.
No connectivity. Like I said, there is a vague sense of connectivity between some things that happen in 4 and that go back to season 1, but it's not anything that if you never saw it, if you watched them all in a row or you watched them all out of sequence, it's not going to have anything to do with it. Okay. Yeah, I'm really, I'm curious now to go and see what people had to say about season 2, because I thought it was
all. Did you finish season 4?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I have not. So.
Yeah. No, it was weekly, but it's all out now, season 4. So anyway, that's all over on Max, all 4 seasons. We're about to get into season 3, and I think that stars Marciana Ali, or at least his picture is on the, if you go to a little thumbnail on Max, he represents the series in the thumbnail. So that's how I knew he was on there. So, but anyway, that's that. And then I didn't have a chance to talk about it because this came out when we were on the cruise, but the third episode just dropped today and we watched it this morning and I hope I get the title of this right, The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, which is the long awaited Rick and Michonne series. So it, covers where Rick Grimes, who is the main character of The Walking Dead, which launched back in 2010, where he's been after the bridge disaster. He had to blow up a bridge while he was bleeding to death. Yeah, I think two seasons before the series ended. And we did find out that he survived that explosion by falling into the river. He washes up on shore. Again, we watched this also on AMC Plus, which is where you can find this accessible through Prime, which is how we have it. There's an 8-pack of the Best of Rick episodes, and we just watched them. And so we rewatched this episode. So in that episode, which was Andy Lincoln's swan song on the regular show, and again, he left the show because he wanted to go home to England, missed his family, and he'd totally get it. He'd been making that show for like a decade and just wanted to go home. And so he starts the show. He had fallen. I don't remember all this because, again, a lot of these episodes, they didn't connect. But he had fallen backwards onto some rebar, which punctured his body. So he has to pull himself off of it, and he's bleeding. He gets on a horse, and he's leading this group of walkers away from something or other, and then he comes upon this bridge that they're rebuilding. He has to blow up this bridge by, of course, firing his huge Colt Python gun. I think that was the sidearm. Blowing it up, which knocks him into the dirty, filthy walker water. He's still bleeding, washes up on the shore, and that's when he is abducted by the city dump woman, Jadis, who is a character who has now went on to be on The Walking Dead, The World Beyond, which was another miniseries they did, because she's part of the big bad of the universe, the Central Republic. And but she abducts him because this Central Republic basically abducts people that they feel they can be useful. So he was there for 6 years, and then eventually Michonne, who was his wife and also fathered him a son that he didn't know about because she was pregnant when he disappeared, she set out to find him. And this has to do with finding out what Rick has been up to, and then her finally finding him, and kind of what happens in those three episodes. So I won't spoil any more. Todd, have you seen any of it, or is that on your pile?
I can watch it on Philo because it has AMC, so I'll probably watch it there. I'll get around with it. I'll get around to it.
You know, it's not going to light the world on fire, and you're not going to read any headlines about it that are really going to blow your mind. So it'll end up being fine regardless. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. I think they're doing well with it. This series immediately corrects something from the comics that never happened to Rick, and I won't tell you any more about it. So there you go.
Yeah, I of all the Walking Dead shows, this is the one I was most interested in.
Yeah, so. Daryl Dixon, the one with Maggie and Negan in New York City, this is great. This you will enjoy. So okay. Yeah, this one gets my top marks. And again, AMC Plus, which I have through Prime. Todd, you said you can get it off of Philo. But anyway, it's out there to be found. And eventually, Walking Deads do tend to end up on Netflix, if that's still the case. So should you not choose to sample in this fashion, it might end up there eventually. So, but anyway, that is the end of the Geek Easy. Time to get out that app. The Air Qantas app to skip out on our bill yet again, because we are due in the land down under. Hologram Tina and the mutants are waiting for us to take on 20 questions. Let's make it happen.
Welcome to another edition of Thunderdome!
Thank you, Tina. The mutants have been gathered for a topic or a game to be entertained. And this week, we are talking a game, and that is 20 questions. Very simple, 20 questions, yes or no. And the last question is your final guess. So at this point, we're going to do 1990s genre TV. So genre is science fiction, fantasy. I think those are the main genres we talk about. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless you can do like musical or something else. So, but we're doing genre in regards to science fiction, fantasy, like superheroes. Mm-hmm, so there we go. So, Charlie, would you like to guess first?
I will receive first. I'm going to let you guess first. Because I'll probably toss you a softball that'll be easy for you.
I'll put my guessing cap on now.
You Spock hat? Turn on the siren?
Yes, the Spock siren. Yes, we'll go on.
There you go.
If I lose, it'll go.
Its own slide whistle.
Or Majel Barrett will say, "You're a loser."
Oh, she never said that. She was a wonderful lady. That's rude. Oh. Anyway.
Okay.
All right, take it away.
Your best shot. Oh, I got to hit you with my best shot.
Yes, yeah.
All right. Was this a syndicated TV series?
And you're referring to when it was on originally, correct?
Correct. Like on one of those UHF channels, not like on standard broadcast.
It was not a syndicated program, no.
Oh, so on the networks. Okay. Is this based on an IP that had already been established?
No.
Okay, so an original genre show. Okay. Is this a sci-fi show?
Yes.
Okay, sci-fi show.
But obviously not on sci-fi.
Is this set in the future? At the time?
Yes.
Beyond 90s. Okay. Set in the future. Okay. Okay. Is this set on Earth?
Yes. Earth. Earth Fleet.
Okay. Oh, boy. Okay. So it's an original IP. Okay. Did this have aliens in it?
That's a tough one. Would you care to rephrase? Make it a little more specific?
Did it have non-human characters in it?
It did have non-human characters in it.
Non-human characters. Okay. Okay. So was this show a critical or fan-loved show? So, like, was it, like, received well?
I would say yes, but that could be a matter of opinion, but I'm going to say yes.
It's like your fan or your critical. It's one of those. Yeah. Things. Somebody liked this. Would you say somebody liked it?
Somebody
critics
liked
or the fans?
It. The critics
okay.
or the
that's
fans.
Good. That's good enough. Yes. Okay. Boy. Okay. So, is this an action-adventure style? With
yes,
like explosions so. And beat 'em ups.
There were explosions like okay. and the beat 'em ups.
So 90s TV series. I'm trying to think what would have been on like network TV at the time. So you already answered questions. So this was network TV. Okay. Did this last more than a season?
Yes.
Last more than a season. Okay. So some longevity. So it's science fiction. Was there any space travel involved?
No.
So it's definitely on Earth and not leaving the planet. Okay, crap. Did it have any comedic beats?
I mean, any show has comedic beats. You know what I'm saying? So that's a difficult question.
But it wasn't like a serious, was it a really serious show or did it have
Yes, I would say it's okay. a very serious show.
Serious show. Okay, so not like
it wasn't like, MacGyver
or something like that where it was like, oh, we're going to make a joke at the end of the show.
Sci-fi Seinfeld. It wasn't sci-fi Seinfeld. Yes.
Okay. So was this an hour-long show?
Correct.
Hour-long show. Okay, crap. Okay. Did they explore the ocean?
They explored the ocean.
Oh, no. I think was Roy Scheider on the show?
Roy Schneider was on the show, correct.
No, Scheider, not Schneider, the guy.
Oh, not the guy with the, not the guy with the big
not
phone?
Not the tool belt. Not the tool belt. So he is on this?
I would say that Scheider from One Day to Schneider from One Day to Time was not on this show. But okay, someone with the last name, that guy in question.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Was this, was there a precocious teen on the show?
Yes. Precocious teen on the show. Okay.
Now I have to remember the name of this title. Was it Sequest DSV?
You know, I'm not going to get that specific. The name of the show did become that. I believe it was simply. It could be Sequest. Simply. And again, this is yes, correct. It is Sequest, and I picked it simply because over on cross promotion over on our Patreon, my recording partner Jen Watson and I, this was a favorite show of hers because she's a bit younger than us. She watched it growing up. This is a favorite of hers, so I've watched several episodes of this, and it did air on NBC in 1994. 4 and 95, and I believe it came back for a television movie or something. I don't have it right in front of me, but yes, that is correct. In 15 questions, not bad.
Well, because I was wondering about that. Yeah, because I thought that kind of, since I edited the videos of those, mm-hmm. that kind of...
Yeah.
Kind of, I'm like, okay, I'm kind of like, oh, okay, that show would have probably been out of my mind if you hadn't done that. So,
exactly. Yeah. And again, I know that I didn't watch it then. Well, I was familiar with it because it was kind of your Star Trek Under the Sea. And because it was the same thing. It was, you know, a military operation, and it was kind of, you know, Monster of the Week or Crisis of the Week, because they were going here to stop these pirates, or they were stopping, you know, environmental terrorists. One of the episodes Jen and I talked about recently, William Shatner was a guest star, and it was right around the time of Generations. He was very Shatnery in that episode. I mean, jump on over to our Patreon, do a 7-day trial, and really just listen to the Sequest episodes, because they're a joy. Jen is a genuine fan, where I am a genuine jackass, the same way I am on the show, just kind of making fun of stuff. Yeah, it's fun. But yeah, Sequest, you got it.
Okay, so the creator of that show also created Farscape, Rockne.
Oh, there you
S. O'Bannon. So good times.
Rockne S. O'Bannon. Very good. All right. Well, now I'm dubious. The pressure is on.
I have to repick mine. I thought this was a 90s show. This actually, the one I picked was a 2001 show.
Oh, so very good.
Okay. I've got to really quickly pick a different one. So let me really quickly. I will.
And then I'll jump in and do a commercial for Secret Friends Unite Patreon at patreon.com/Secret Friends Unite. That's the only one I like to do. And nobody's had to tell me that I had to do anything otherwise. But I'm sure eventually they will. They always get us.
Oh, sci-fi. Thank you for not showing that article. It went offline. Okay. I have to check if the date of it is 90s.
And again, I'll write that it starts in the 90s, but maybe continue to the 2000s. We don't have to get that. We don't have to get that granular, I don't think.
One in mind.
Let's
see. Okay. Yep. I got it. Okay. Cool. Okay.
You know, you actually could have just paused the recording, but that's okay.
It's okay. People need to see how the sausage is made.
Right.
So, okay, Charlie, are you ready to guess?
Let's do it. All right. So, I don't need to ask about when the show came out, but was this a syndicated program? Unless, same question as you.
Nope.
No. Okay. So, this was on a network. Was this show on, did it have a contemporary setting as related to the time it came out?
Correct.
Okay, very good. Was this show dealing with anything of the supernatural ilk?
I'd say sure.
Okay. Was the lead character or characters human?
Yes.
All right. Was the lead character male?
Yes.
Okay, male character. And did the male character lead work for a governmental agency by any chance?
Yes.
Okay, you really struggle with that one.
Well, because I had to think,
so yes, because you're struggling with it makes me think it's not like the X-Files or something like that. So this lead character, was he part of a team of some variety?
Yes.
I'm very uncertain. I don't know. So he's part of a team. It's a he. Did the team, in conjunction with...
I wouldn't put too much emphasis on the team.
Okay, so the team, it's a little bit more of an organization, we'd say. He's part of, like, you know, blah, 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 this thing or that thing. Contemporary it's not setting.
Like Mission Impossible for us or something like that.
Network programming. Was this show something that garnered a fan base to the fact that it had maybe more than one season?
Yes.
So multi-season program on network, contemporary setting, main character is male, part of a team, but not too much emphasis on the team. All right. So Whoops. Uh-oh. Something getting away from me.
I had the number key down. It was just putting 9 and 9 and 9. It was just
You're trying to trick me. All right. Okay. So in the was this a kind of a problem of the week solving kind of show? Mystery to mystery, or was
I'd say very
systematic of the time, going around solving problems. Did this male lead character have a female character as his foil? Do you have a partner? That was two questions. Sorry. Did he have a partner?
Yes.
Okay. Was his partner female? That seems pretty
straightforward. I would say yes.
Okay. Yeah. So male, female, partner. Okay. Oh boy, is this like Renegade? did we decide was this what you would call a science fiction program? I'm sorry, I didn't really cover that part of it. Or did
it's
I already?
It's within that genre.
Okay, yeah. Very good. So they were 112. Holy cow, I really jumped up. That's got a lot of questions. So team aspect, were there recurring villainous characters on this program?
Yeah.
Okay.
So not a huge focus, but there was. Yeah.
Yeah, not a huge focus. Okay. So was your male and female partner team attempting to uncover conspiracies or investigate weird crimes?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I kind of feel like this could be the X-Files. Spit take.
Is that your guess?
That's a guess. I don't get more than one guess?
No, it's all questions. Oh, okay. And you have a guess is where it is. Yeah.
Well, let's see here. Okay. So they're trying to solve mysteries, part of an organization, as it were, and it's man and woman, contemporary setting. Was this television program on the Fox network?
It definitely was.
Oh, okay. Well, did this program generate any short-lived spinoffs by any chance?
No.
Oh. Was this program in a spinoff in and of itself?
In a way, but not directly.
I don't exactly know what that means, but we can move on. Not on the Fox network. Was this program on, it's network television. So is it on NBC?
No, you asked if it was on Fox.
I did. And then I asked
and if I it said was yes. on.
Oh, you did say yes. I thought you.
No, yes, I did say Fox.
Oh, I asked you about
the X-Files.
I asked you about the spinoff thing, and I knew that the X-File did generate some unsuccessful spinoffs with the.
Well, and you, I said, yeah, kind of as a, it was kind of a it's like not your traditional way of a spinoff is probably the best way.
Oh, I asked if this show was a spinoff and you said,
no, you said, did this show create a spinoff?
Oh, very good. Okay.
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
So I said, no, the show had created no spinoffs.
Was there a recurrent catchphrase on this show by any chance?
Not that I remember.
Did this show have anything to do with mysteries like alien abductions? I now I just think you're being coy.
I would say no. No.
Oh. Well, I might really be stumped. On Fox. We did say it was on Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Male and female. Kind of part of a team, but not really. Generated some spinoffs. Was this
this did not
generate spinoffs.
This created no spinoffs.
Created no spinoffs.
Yes.
Correct. Would you say this show was early 90s between 1990 and 1995 or late 90s between 1995 and 1996?
That's not a yes or no. That's not a yes or no question.
right. Early did this show drop in the early 90s? Per the framework I just gave you. No, late 90s.
And you are out of questions.
It can't be Dark Angel because that was a and it was on Fox. It's not
James Buffy. Cameron's Dark Angel.
No. It's not. It's not Buffy because that wasn't on Fox, and correct. It was in the 2000s or well, no, it was 90s.
No, 90s. Yeah, it was on the WB at first. Yeah.
Yeah, the X-Files was going to be my guess, and that obviously is that's not the one. So what is it?
So this is the one where I think it was harder to get to some of the things you answered, but the right. answer was Millennium.
Which is a spinoff of the
X-Files. It's a spinoff of the X-Files. This didn't create any spinoffs, and it was tacitly tied to the X-Files. Not a lot.
Because, yeah, your star was Lance Hendrickson.
Yes.
And was the female lead, was it the actress who was Laurie on The Walking Dead? Was that her?
Well, there were two. So there was Megan Gallagher who played
Catherine. Megan Gallagher.
Season one and two. And then they brought in Clea Scott, season three. The Millennium group, like I said, not a team. And
sounds like a holding company for a real estate scam. The Millennium
group. Because they were trying to stop the apocalypse from happening.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Late 90s. Yep. Oh, okay. So it was X-Files adjacent somehow?
Well, there was an episode where Frank Black showed up on the X-Files in his last appearance.
So that doesn't really make. Yeah, you're right. So it makes it in
done by Chris Carter though.
It was in universe, but to the X-Files.
Correct.
But not a spinoff.
Yeah. So I believe the FBI agencies, He did work for, he was a forensics expert.
Yes.
Then he went back to the FBI later in the show.
The female body inspector.
I'm guessing that's when they tried to probably give it some ratings and boost it.
Right.
But it did last three seasons.
That's not bad. So it actually got out of the, when did it first come on?
96, October 25th, 1996. Ended in 1999 before the millennium.
Right.
It couldn't even get to the millennium.
I know. Couldn't even fulfill its purpose. Well, not bad. Well, my hat's off to you. Well done.
The one I was going to ask you was the one I was going to do was Mutant X, but that started in 2001.
How long did that? I just thought I'm thinking of Generation X was a TV movie, but Mutant X
was, was the syndicated show where. Marvel had something to do with it.
Yeah.
They used the license, but they didn't call anyone they had no X-Men, but they called it Mutant X.
Yeah. Right.
That lasted three seasons.
No, and who showed that? I'm not even aware of it.
And the lead was the guy who played Lex Luthor on Lois and Clark.
Oh, he's an older guy. Or he seems older. He seems because when I think of Lex Luthor, I think of Rosenbaum when I think of Lex Luthor. He's just because he's put the most time into the character screen wise than anybody else out there because he was on that show for a decade. So or on and off that show for a decade. Well done. Congratulations. I think this is a show this is a game that often ends in a stalemate or we both win, but it's not often that we have onesie twosie like this. So. Well done. Well done. And that takes us to the end of our program. So, friends, thank you as always for joining us. And again, a big love and support to all of our Patreons out there. Todd, where do people find you out there on the net?
Primarily Threads these days, at Teoxtra, at Secret Friends Unite, Twitter, at Teoxtra, and Secret Friends U.
Exactly. And of course, always on our Secret Friends Unite Discord, which is the coolest corner of the internet by which to have great geek discussions. I am also on Threads and Instagram. I'm C3 Carpenter. Go ahead and spell it out. Thanks, Facebook, for it was because my account got bombed so long ago. But my lovely wife, April, and I do run the USS Grand Petoskey. We're one of the biggest chapters of the International Star Trek Fan Club in the world. We are based here in West Michigan, but we have members all over the state, as well as chapters all over Michigan and Eastern Canada, which is called Region 13, which I currently run and am responsible for. If you're a Trek fan in those areas or even outside of them and listening to the sound of my voice, if you visit sfi.org or certainly visit ussgrandpetoskey.com, I can help you find Trekkers in your neck of the woods. It would be my pleasure. With that, I will thank you again, friends, for joining us. And I'll tell you that sharing is caring, and keep on trucking.
Be the hero, not the villain.
In a truck.
My man.
This podcast is part of the Secret Friends Unite podcasting network. Visit secretfriendsunite.com for more great shows, articles, news, reviews, and more. Secret Friends Unite podcasts are available on Apple, Google, Spotify, and other podcast services around the world. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can join us on Facebook or our new Discord server, or follow at Secret Friends U on Twitter. Please subscribe to Secret Friends Unite on YouTube and visit our merch store at tpublic.com. Just search Secret Friends Unite. Thanks for listening.